From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul.
You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul.
Today on Dialogue, you'll be hearing from IPM's Tanisha Spain, the host of Mid-American Gardener.
April was National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And as we know, child abuse happens in every community and not just one month out of the year. And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to spotlight a team in our community who is doing the good work in children's advocacy. I would like to introduce the people that we are going to be interviewing today. We've got Dr. Lisa, Elizabeth Leves, and Mary Tewell. They're all from the Children's Advocacy Center in Champaign. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about what each of you do. So Dr. Lisa, we'll start with you.
Well, hello there. Thank you for having Children's Advocacy today. We really appreciate your time.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, so I'm the Executive Director of the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center, and I play a pivotal role in leading the organization's mission to provide a coordinated child-focused response to allegations of child sexual and serious physical abuse. So I do strategic leadership and governance, program oversight and coordination, and community engagement and advocacy.
Wonderful. Okay. Elizabeth, let's go to you. Tell us a little bit about your role at the office.
Thank you. My role has been as family advocate for the last 2.5 years, but I'm working on stepping into an administrative role to help support Dr. Lisa with all the important work and grants and whatnot that we have to tackle here. But I'll talk a bit about the advocacy role as well. That role is really working to support families and children as they come in. So I'm really the first friendly face at the door. I help them feel comfortable, and then we support them and follow up with case management for the duration of the case. So I do follow up with the parents and connect them to resources and information as they need.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Mary, tell us a little bit more about what you do.
So I am the forensic interviewer. I'm also the MDD coordinator, which is that part of my job is just working with the different teams that we work with, law enforcement, DCFS, prosecution, medical, and those making sure things are going smoothly and setting up case review every month and just kind of coordinating everything between those. As a forensic interviewer, that job is the little bit harder one. So that part of my job is where I do listen and talk with kids that have possibly been abused or have witnessed, you know, violence in some way or at risk of harm for it. So those are the kids that I get to talk to on a regular basis.
You guys are a small but mighty crew doing a lot for our community. Dr. Lisa, let's go back to you. Tell us a little bit more about the history, the mission, and the services that you all provide.
Oh, I'd be more than happy to tell you all about that. So the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center, we are affectionately called CAC around the community. We're a community-based child-focused program that was established in 2000. So we've been around for a while, establishing a safe, agency-neutral setting where professionals from various disciplines collaborate to respond to allegations of child sexual abuse and serious physical abuse.
And what counties do you serve? Do you have a lot?
Yeah, Champaign County and Ford County. And the mission, CAC's mission, is to coordinate a timely, comprehensive, and multidisciplinary response to child sexual abuse and serious physical abuse allegations in a safe, agency-neutral, and child-focused environment.
I stopped in, like I said, and got to kind of see the office. And you guys gave me a tour. I noticed immediately that you do what you can to create a warm and tranquil environment, peaceful. And Elizabeth, you talked about how you're that kind of smiling face people see when they come in the door. Obviously not a positive visit a lot of times if they're needing your services. So what is it like to try to provide that cozy, safe atmosphere? How do you guys go about that?
Yeah, there's a number of things that we do, and I think that kind of plays into the history of why we're here too. Because prior to CACs or children's advocacy centers existing around the country, we really didn't have any type of coordinated response to child abuse. So children would be interviewed repeatedly, and they'd be interviewed wherever was most convenient. A lot of times that was a police station, which you can imagine how scary and how far from welcoming that sort of space is for children who are already going through something, or families that have experienced this trauma. So we really are working here to create the opposite, more or less. We invite all the team members to be here so that the child only has to tell their story once, and the interviews are recorded in this center, so that again that story can be used for anyone else who needs to hear it, the investigators that we coordinate with. And then we have our whole center really furnished and decorated to feel as warm and inviting as possible. We've got some fun stuff like
So
stuffed
really just
animals, fidgets, couches, fun kid stuff, and giant Uno, which is also a big hit.
now, Mary, you talked about interviewing and for and the difficulty of that. Can you share a little bit about the difference between having a child, like Elizabeth said, at that police department versus having them in a space like your office has? Is there a difference in their willingness to open up? Is there a difference in their willingness to share with you just based on the setting that they're in or how comfortable they feel?
Yes, I think even as adults, it's not fun to go to a police station. It's kind of a scary thing. And I think for kids, some kids, still have a fear of police, or may have had a bad experience in their life where a family member was taken away by police. So that can be a scary thing. And when they come here, our interviews are led by the child. I can't ask any suggestive questions, no leading questions, nothing direct. And I get to know the kid first. I want to know what they like to do, what their hobbies are. And that's for a multitude of reasons. That's one, to get them comfortable in the room and know that I'm not a scary person, that I'm there to help and make sure they're safe. And the other is sometimes their stories are traumatic and they get to a point where they can't talk anymore. I can go back to those happy. Tell me again about what you did with your drawing or, about your last track meet. It takes them back to a happy place that they can then kind of regroup, and if they want to continue, then they've had a little break and they can continue on. The room is comfortable. It's a basic room, so there's no suggestive pictures or distractions in there. It's a time for them to be able to focus and know that we're there to help them and protect them in that situation. And it's a lot more comfortable than in a stale, kind of cold interview room at a police station.
Gotcha. And Dr. Lisa, for folks who may not be aware of how your office works, how do you get involved in these cases? Folks aren't necessarily coming through the front door. Is it a referral service, or who contacts you, and how do you get involved?
It is definitely a referral service. What it looks like is DCFS or law enforcement will contact CAC, and then when they contact us, Mary or Elizabeth will schedule the child for the interview with us here at CAC.
And you touched on this when we were talking, and it kind of stuck with me. You said your office offers a path to healing. Let's talk a little bit more about that. What is that path to healing? What does that look like?
Well, we don't just investigate abuse, we offer that path to healing through trauma-informed care, forensic interviews, family advocacy, and community collaboration. Our office becomes a safe place for these children where they can recover and find families who can support them and give them hope and justice.
How has abuse changed in, say, the last 5 to 10 years? Has technology played a role in that? And I think each of you would have a really different perspective on that, given your roles there. So, Elizabeth, we'll start with you. What changes have you seen?
I will say, I think that with technology, in my role working primarily with the parents, parents have a big task ahead of them in trying to keep their kids safe on technology, and it is more than I think we ever could have imagined 10 years ago. The average age now that a child is first exposed to pornography is 8 years old, and that number just keeps getting lower year after year as kids are allowed more access to the internet, unrestricted technology usage. So there's a huge, huge, really responsibility with parents to make sure that everything your child has access to, everyone your child has access to online, is a safe and child-friendly space, a child-friendly person. And even some of the websites that unfortunately are meant to be child safe, like Roblox, one of the biggest well-known places for predators to patrol online is on Roblox. So unfortunately, it takes a lot of work on the parents' part.
We're far beyond the old desktop in the living room that everybody gets 15 minutes on, and mom's kind of, in the background. These kids are with devices in their rooms, a lot of times behind closed doors. So that responsibility, and it can be tough as a parent, I know. You do the best you can, but it is really, really scary out there. And Mary, same question for you. What changes have you seen in the last several years?
I think a lot of abuse is still unreported for a number of reasons. I do feel that more people are becoming aware or vigilant of things they see and reporting it, whether it really is abuse or not. It's better to err on the side of caution and let professionals figure that out. I do feel a lot of kids feel a little more comfortable coming forward or going to their parents and telling them things. I think, like Elizabeth said, technology plays a big part. And, kids take pictures, they send them, not realizing what's going to happen afterwards, and then get scared or they're threatened. And I think sometimes they're more willing to come forward or share it with a friend or a teacher or someone they trust. So more of that comes forward. I think law enforcement and DCFS, have things change and they're made more aware of what to look for. And so I think, they notice things and think maybe that's a risk of harm. Maybe we need to interview that kid. So I think more abuse is being reported. The media reports more on it. So I think kids realize they're not alone and they can report it. It's not a specific person that this happens to. It happens to everybody or anybody. And that they feel like they can are more comfortable coming forward and sharing it.
So, still underreported, but more people are coming forward.
Yes.
Gotcha. Dr. Lisa, anything to add there?
I do. I have a couple of things to add. Some of the things that we've learned over the past 10 to 20 years is that the long-term impact of trauma can have a serious consequence on the child's brain development. And so what happens is that can cause risk for depression, anxiety, PTSD, and also chronic physical illnesses later in life. Another area that we know now that works, at least over the past 25 years, is a multidisciplinary approach to assessing child abuse. So now more than ever, we know that a team approach, bringing law enforcement together, bringing DCFS together, bringing victim advocates, and along with CAC and others that partake in this entire team, such as hospital staff, we now know that that's key to protecting kids and supporting their healing.
In your office, once you have a case or a family that you're working with, you continue to work with that family until that case is closed. Is that correct? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's part of my role in advocacy is providing that case management because even from the beginning of a case, there can be a lot of different players involved. As Dr. Lisa was kind of mentioning, we have multiple professionals and investigators, and we keep track of all of that, of who's involved, so that if a parent loses somebody's phone number or whatever, we can supply that. But that keeps going for as long as the case is open. So The case may be closed by DCFS, typically within 60 days. Law enforcement closes it once they've sent it to the state's attorney's office. But then once it gets to the state's attorney's office and is going to trial, sometimes that can take years, years before a child has resolution. So, we still are here providing that counseling at times if they need extra support to be able to testify. We want to get them in for some extra counseling sessions or even just kind of advocacy, setting them up with times to go into the court and practice or other professionals that might be able to help as their needs kind of change throughout the case.
And we're going to talk about that extra support in just a bit. But Dr. Lisa, I want to touch on another very important topic, and that is the issue with stranger danger. I'm an 80s kid. I was taught stranger danger. And even now, it just gives me chills to say because what you're seeing turns that on its head.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, like you said, I'm a child of the 70s and late 70s, early 80s as well. So we know stranger danger is a concept that we grew up with. And so the concept, although well known, can be misleading. And so the reason it can be misleading is because it can also be harmful. It sends out the only message that children hear, that might put them at risk, or it might oversimplify the reality of abuse. And we know through research, just even the data that we take here at CAC, that the majority of child abuse cases involve someone that the child knows or trusts. So it's not a stranger in the majority of the cases. It's often a family member, a friend, or some caregiver, someone in that caregiving role. So by focusing only on strangers, what we are doing is we're ignoring the risk of the real warning signs and failing to teach kids how to identify unsafe behavior, even from familiar people. So one of the things that we do here at CAC is we encourage age-appropriate conversations that empower children to understand body safety, how to set boundaries for themselves, and to speak up. Not just when someone unfamiliar makes them uncomfortable, but even when it's someone that they know.
That's huge. That's huge because it really flies in the face of that entire stranger danger argument. So just knowing that and having those tools is a great way to keep yourself and your children safe. So the extra support that Elizabeth touched on, sometimes that comes in the way of extra counseling and therapy sessions, but those things are not free. And so we are talking about how to support your organization and organizations like that. Talk a little bit more about that extra support and how the community can rally around you guys.
One of the things that we're really fortunate here to be able to provide to children and families is some tangible support, even when they're here. We do provide other general services that I'll touch on a bit, like helping families with applications for public aid or different programs that they might qualify for, Section 8. Those sort of things, because as Dr. Lisa was touching on, 9 times out of 10 that we see somebody here, it's a perpetrator that was known and trusted and part of the family's system, perhaps even a support or a provider for the family. So when they get to us, they have this whole new set of needs for, food, clothing, financial help, a place to stay when, all of the work that the perpetrator did really to support them and get into their life at the time ends up being support that's lost when they come to us. So we do some of that application help, just kind of navigating the systems. But we also are able to provide things here like deodorant, socks, journals to let your feelings out, coloring pages. We have stuffed animals and fidgets that kids can take home with them. And we've seen those be really powerful for kids, really, really helpful to have that sense of choice and comfort taking something with them. So we are always looking for donations for those things, for little fidget toys or stuffed animals, snacks, blankets, hats and gloves in the winter, coats, all those things that
Those
families need.
staples that sometimes kids in those situations may not have.
Yeah.
Mary, what difference does it make in a kid who's doing an interview that can hold a stuffy or can hold a fidget? For people who might not think those things or those items, those comfort items are a big deal, do you see a difference when a kid can sit crisscross applesauce in a silly chair or walk on those tiles? Like, does that matter? Does it factor in?
It really does. Some of our kids have, maybe some slight autism or some other things, or they're just anxiety's high. They don't know why they're here, or they're terrified of what they don't know what's going to happen. And to be able to take that fidget ball and just keep pulling at it, it's letting them get that anger out. It's bringing them some comfort. It's something that they don't focus on doing, but it's helping them as they talk. We have a weighted stuffed animal in each room. I've seen them just hug that and hold it. And, I've also seen a kid kind of choke it, like they're angry, but they're mad at who did this to them. And it gives them a sense of control back. They can control what they're doing in that room because it's led by them. And our biggest goal when any aged child comes back in is to start to give them control of their life back. That was taken from them when someone abused them, and they need to know that they have a say. I've had kids come in and say, sit in that room, and they're like, I'm not ready to talk. And that's okay. Not everybody's ready. Sometimes it's a year or more till they're ready to talk. But I gave them that control. I didn't force them. They're able to sit in there, and maybe they could build rapport with me and talk and play with the fidgets and kind of take their mind off of it. And then sometimes they're ready to open up after that. And sometimes they're like, I'll come back another time. But just having something that they can control what they're doing in that small time is very important to them. And to know that we know that some kids need things to fidget with. They need something to hold on to feel some kind of comfort. And that's huge for them.
Excellent. All right, Dr. Lisa, we're going to have you put on your executive director cap. You've been hitting the pavement hard lately because there are in a perfect world, there's a million things that you guys could get your hands on that would take your services to the next level. But you've been really out here trying to inform the community about what you do, what is important. What is next for CAC, and kind of tell us what's on the horizon for the office.
Sure, there's a lot. I mean, we want to move from surviving to truly thriving as an agency. And what that means is we tend to dream big. We want a safer, more compassionate world for every child who walks in the door. And what that takes is funding. We need flexible funding. Right now, we are grant-based, so everything that we do, we have to rely on grants. Grants have limitations. So what we are trying to do, and the re part of the reason that we're trying to get the word out about CAC and what we do in Champaign County and also Ford County, is that we want the public to know that we're here and that we can do so much more if we had more donations that would allow us the unrestricted funding. For example, we could expand mental health services, like have an on-site trauma-informed team to work with these children. We could also have a state-of-the-art facility. Right now, we are very blessed to have the location that we do have. We are going to be moving in a couple of months to a new location. However, the ideal location would be a state-of-the-art facility that looks like a house, because remember, we would like for our children to feel as if they're at home. We also want a robust prevention and education plan and education program, I'm sorry, where we have people such as Mary who love educating school children and parents and communities about prevention, digital safety, child development, in school curriculums that will allow the children to learn how to empower themselves about body safety and knowledge. If we have more funds, we could do a whole host of things, including other support services. So, around the clock crisis response and support, because trauma, as you know, doesn't follow a 9 to 5 schedule. We can do all of this, including having stronger partnerships with other community agencies, which is the other part of CAC being seen more in the public. Now we're getting more agencies who do want to partner with us and to help us, not just with, funding or anything like that, but being collaborative together to ensure that these children are protected.
Vital, definitely vital
It is
services
in
for
this
the
community.
community. So, if someone is listening to this right now and is moved, as a community member, what can we do? What can the community do to help you achieve those goals?
Well, other than funding, we take volunteers, volunteers who will come in and do some of the things that we need. For example, we have a golf event coming up September 12th that we're getting ready to advertise. So if we have volunteers, we could definitely use their help. When we have the golfing event, we have another fundraising event coming up pretty soon in June with Esquire Restaurant. And so we need to start marketing those things.
You can follow us on Facebook to find out more of what we're doing on an ongoing basis. But we also post educational stuff and resources there. It's just the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center. You'll also be able to find our wish list. You can go to our website for more information and resources as well. That's champagnecac.com. We've got all sorts of stuff, but I think part of it is the community being aware and looking out in their own lives and their own little spheres of influence for signs and things like that. But then join in on our efforts as well to educate and prevent and provide a better response for the kiddos who need it.
And another
Mary, you'd
way
like to
that a
speak?
lot of people could is if you work in a church group or a school group or your organization wants to know more things about what to look for, what you can do, you want a little more education on child abuse prevention and how to help or what to do, reach out to us. I would love to set up a time to come and talk to your, educate you. We have pamphlets, we have things that, it doesn't have to be a long drawn out half a day thing, but just educating people on things to look for, what to do if a child does disclose to them, that can be huge on what happens when a kid discloses, how it's handled, whether that kid can come here and talk or whether they're done because so many people have talked to them already. Reach out to us. We'd love to set up times to educate. I think education, the more you know, the more you can help and save the kids. They are our future and they're the main piece of every puzzle.
Absolutely. And let's touch on that just a little bit more. We've talked a lot about, you guys getting involved with these cases, but we didn't really talk a lot about the preventative, the proactive things that you're doing. So, Mary, if you'd like to share a little bit more, when you go into the schools or go into these groups, what are some of the things that you discuss there?
I give an overview of what we do and our process, but then educate them on, here's the people to look out for. Here's the simple thing. As you said earlier, you're a 70s, 80s kid. We always said, go tell everybody goodbye, give them a hug and a kiss. That's not okay today. And people don't think about that. That abuser could be in that room and you're forcing them to go do something that that abuser may be doing to them, kissing them, forcing kids to take photographs. That could be a trauma trigger. Maybe somebody's made them take photographs they don't want. Bringing that awareness up instead of people trying to hide it. The more you hide abuse, the more it happens. And no, and it does happen to every level of economic and social, race, ethnicity. It has no name, no number, no nothing. It affects everybody. And a lot of people think, oh, that's only happens to people that are dirty and, homeless or whatever. It doesn't, and they want to hide it. And all that does is down the road, that trauma that was never dealt with, that kid now can't function as an adult because they never dealt with it. So hiding it does nothing. So just bringing that awareness of what to look for and what to do, those simple steps, those two things can change, make a difference in a child's life.
Ladies, thank you so much. Is there anything that I did not ask that any of you would like to add or touch on? Dr. Lisa?
Well, one of the topics that we do not discuss enough is marginalized groups where we see a high incidence of abuse. We all know it's true. Any child can experience abuse, regardless of background, but marginalized groups such as children of color, children with disabilities, LGBTQ plus youth, and those living in poverty are disproportionately impacted. So these children typically face systemic barriers. Abuse is underreported, and a lack of culturally responsive services delays intervention and healing. So what we try to do at CAC is to strive to recognize these disparities and respond with equity, empathy, and awareness. And I do think that we need to talk about those communities a bit more in the public as preventative measures to child abuse.
So you guys are doing the great work there, but so much more work to be done. And we appreciate everything that you're doing in the community. And please look them up if you were listening to this and you know, are in a position to help. And it doesn't have to be financial, as you heard. They could use volunteers as well. So I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Lisa Liggins Chambers, PhD Executive Director of Children's Advocacy Center, as well as Elizabeth Lebs, Deputy Administrator, and Mary Twell, our forensic interviewer there. Thank you, ladies, so much for being on today to talk about this very important dialogue.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was IPM's Tanisha Spain for Dialogue today.